46 with showers in the morning and some clearing in the afternoon. It's 10 o'clock.
For Radio Catskill, this is Rosie Starr. Welcome to Farming Country, locally produced radio about rural life in the Catskills and the Delaware River Valley. On today's show, Keith Hubbard's Star Talk report highlights the significance of the vernal equinox. Sweetwater fishing guide Evan Padua has a report that highlights late winter river conditions and inspires handmade fly tying. Stephanie Phillips finalizes her conversation with Michelle Poprowski at the Catskill Fish Hatchery in Livingston Manor. In this segment, Now You Know, we'll hear about the stock distribution of trout. All of that coming up on today's Farming Country. But first, news headlines.
This is Radio Catskill. I'm Jason Dole with this update from the New York Public News Network. New York Governor Kathy Hochul wants to stiffen penalties against retail theft, but Democrats in the state legislature are pushing back. She appeared with grocery store and other shop owners who back her efforts. Karen DeWitt has more.
Hochul, as part of a $45 million plan to combat retail theft, wants to raise criminal penalties for anyone who assaults a store employee. She highlighted the previously announced proposals at a news conference this week at the state capitol, saying shoplifting incidents involving physical force have more than doubled.
These individuals are very exposed, especially in a small shop with just one worker. They don't have any way to protect themselves. They're literally on the front line. And under this law, assaulting a retail worker would carry the same elevated penalties that we have in place for assaulting a first responder.
Yeah. The governor wants to make the crime a Class D felony. Hochul put the proposals in her state budget plan, where governors have the most leverage to get policy issues passed. She also wants to empower the state police to investigate and prosecute interstate and even international retail theft rings. She set aside $25 million and is directing 100 more troopers to be hired. The governor spoke as the state Senate and Assembly were releasing their budget plans. Neither included the additional penalties. Senate Deputy Majority Leader Michael Gianaris says the Senate wants to look at other ways to fight retail theft, including targeting repeat offenders.
My understanding, the retail workers themselves are not necessarily clamoring for this proposal, and we have a different way of addressing going after the people who are the repeat offenders in that context. We think that's a better approach.
Gianaris says the retail workers union does not support the governor's proposal. When Democrats gained the majority in the legislature in 2019, they moved to reform some of the state's criminal justice laws, including the controversial bail reform law. It made far fewer crimes bail eligible. Some critics say that has contributed to the rise of retail theft, something the Democrats dispute. Many progressive Democrats in the legislature are not in favor of increasing criminal penalties without first determining any potential adverse impact on communities of color. Gianaris made clear, though, that Democrats are concerned about the rise in shoplifting.
We are all very sensitive to the problems associated with retail theft, and we want to address it.
In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt for the New York Public News Network.
Support for Farm and Country comes from Damascus Citizens for Sustainability, a community-supported, science-based nonprofit taking legal actions, providing tools for action, and raising awareness of fracking damage since 2008, proactively protecting public health in the Delaware River Basin and beyond. DamascusCitizens.org. Welcome back to Farm and Country. I'm your host, Rosie Starr. On today's show, Sweetwater fishing guide Evan Padua has a report that highlights late winter river conditions and inspires handmade fly tying. And Stephanie Phillips finalizes her conversation with Michelle Poprowski at the Catskill Fish Hatchery in Livingston Manor. In this segment, Now You Know, we'll hear about the stock distribution of trout. But first, here is Keith Hubbard with this week's Star Talk report. Thank you for joining us on Radio Catskill for this week's locally produced Farm and Country.
For Farm and Country, I'm Keith Hubbard, and this is Star Talk. At 11.06 p.m. on Tuesday, the sun will cross the celestial equator from south to north, marking the start of spring. This event is known as the vernal equinox. The equinox marks the midpoint between the sun's lowest path across the sky and the sun's highest path across the sky. Track the location of the sun at noon over the coming weeks and months, and you will see the arc of the sun moving northward. The date of Easter is determined by the vernal equinox. Easter falls on the first Sunday after the first full moon after the vernal equinox, which will be Sunday, March 31st this year. There are a few interesting things that occur during an equinox. The sun will rise due east, will set due west, and will be directly overhead at the equator at noon. The vernal equinox is a perfect day to determine due east or due west from your yard. The point where the sun meets the horizon at sunrise or sunset will be due east or due west. Also, the length of day and night are nearly equal on the equinox. On Tuesday, we will see 12 hours and 8 minutes of daylight. With the sun on a northern trajectory in the sky, the sunrises will be coming earlier in the day and the sunsets will be coming later in the day. The sun will continue to move north in the sky until late June, at which time it will reverse direction and head south. Monday will be the vernal equinox and the start of spring. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas for future StarTalk segments, my email address is startalk@farmandcountry.org. For Farm and Country and StarTalk, this has been Keith Hubbard reminding you to keep looking up.
For Radio Catskill and Farm and Country, this is Evan Padua bringing you Hooked on Fishing. This late March of 2024 is bringing early spring weather. When the swamps are full, we know spring is just around the corner. The area rivers and creeks have been receiving a lot of rain, and the reservoirs are all nearing 100% capacity as we head into the month of April. This will provide good cold flows for spring trout fishing. In these coming weeks, before we begin to see the first mayfly hatch of the year, it is a great time to belly up to your fly bench and desk and tie flies for the upcoming season. Tying a fly from animal furs, feathers, and sometimes synthetic materials is a fun and artistic activity for fly fishermen. There are few things more satisfying than fooling a trout with a fly that you tied days or weeks before in preparation for that exact situation. It is even cooler if you are able to use animal fibers such as pheasant tail or deer hair or bucktail that perhaps you are able to harvest yourself as well. The first bugs that trout eat in the spring season are generally brown and black stoneflies, some caddisflies, some small blue-winged olives, and then the first big mayfly hatch called the Hendricksons, or Ephemerella subvaria. This mayfly typically hatches in mid to late April from rocks under the river, and the trout absolutely love them. They are often imitated with dry fly and emerger patterns, including dark and brown-green materials, sometimes some red. Pheasant tail wrapped fly patterns work well as a great Hendrickson mayfly. You will observe trout and fall fish gorging themselves on the river's surface during the middle of the afternoon when these bugs hatch. These flies are generally tied on the size 12 to 16 hooks. If you have any personal interest in fly tying and its deep history in our area, the Catskill Fly Fishing Center and Museum is located in Livingston Manor, New York. It is a great resource to learn and see what can be done in the world of fly tying. For Radio Catskill, Farm and Country, and Hooked on Fishing, this has been Evan Padua. Be sure to match the hatch.
More information is available at sweetwaterguide.com.
Good morning. This is Stephanie Phillips with Farm and Country. Our expert today is Michelle Poprowski, who manages a facility with about 600,000 trout, mostly brown trout. Her facility stocks trout from Albany to Long Island. Michelle is the only female manager working for New York State's Department of Environmental Conservation. Michelle, how long have you been at the Catskill Fish Hatchery?
I've been here for 9 years.
That's a while. And where did you come from?
I'm from Rochester, New York, so about 4 hours northwest of here. And we do have a fish hatchery up in Rochester, too, the Caledonia Fish Hatchery, so as a youngster visiting that facility many times.
When you say we had a facility, you're talking about the DEC.
I am talking about the DEC, yes. We are a broodstock facility of brown trout, so our purpose for the state is not only to stock trout in local waters, but also to raise brown trout for the rest of the state. So we have adult fish termed broodstock on site that each year we spawn, we reproduce, and make new fish to be stocked.
Why do you work with brown trout?
So I kind of fell into this facility. This was one of a few that I had applied for and got the job at this location. This facility specializes in brown trout, I would say simply because of its water source. So we have an abundance of clean, cool water here in the Catskills. We have a spring that gives us over 2,000 gallons a minute. We do use a couple of creek water sources and wells also, but that spring is really why this hatchery was built here. Brown trout particularly, the state stocks several different species of trout, but by far we stock more brown trout than anything else.
Where do you send your trout?
So New York State stocks 1,200 waters, rivers, streams, lakes, ponds. Down here, we will stock 12 different counties. So we stock home here, right in Sullivan County, Delaware, Greene, Putnam, Rockland, Ulster, Westchester, Nassau, Suffolk. So all of the counties between really Sullivan and Delaware and south.
So, Michelle, if you're a fisherman, how do you find out when a particular brook or river is going to be stocked?
Sure. So the DEC website has some really great mapping available in different layers on those maps. So you can actually see what time of year the fish are being stocked, what's being stocked, and you can actually see those access points where we have dropped fish. So it's actually very intuitive and user-friendly. So be access from the Hunt Fish New York app with those same GIS layers available. It's actually pretty easy, but it is a internet interface.
How do you load the fish onto the trucks?
So there's a few different ways to load. The first thing that's very important for accurate loading is to be sure we know what size our fish are. So at the hatchery, we talk about fish size being fish per pound. How many fish are there per pound? And there's a convenient equation that we use knowing the fitness of the fish that will allow us to say how many inches that fish is. So we know that 3.5 fish per pound is a 9-inch fish. In addition to 9-inch fish, we do stock what we deem as 2-year-old fish that are actually 36 months old, but they're 12 inches in length. And so I know that if a fish is 1 to the pound, for trout at least, this is how this equation works, is for trout, is 1 fish to the pound is a 12-inch fish. So when we're going to load, we have to know the size of our fish, and then it's really just displacement. Just like you getting in the bathtub and how the water displaces, that's how we're loading fish. So the water gets put on the truck. Each tank holds about 250 gallons of water. These are 30,000-pound vehicles fully loaded. They're freight liners. They haul a lot of fish. So we put the water on the truck. We know the sample of the fish. If I know how many fish are going to a run, I can simply load those fish on with the displacement factor. We use fish pumps here. We can also hand load fish with nets.
That's what do you mean? You pump the fish out?
Yes. So there are fish pumps that I would say everybody in the industry uses. It's basically like a large vacuum. You have an intake in the pond. It is our engines are gas powered. The unit gets primed with water. Once the water is running through, you can open up the intake. The fish literally get sucked up the line into the tower of the pump, where there is a person standing to be sure that the fish are flowing at the right rate, and either the fish can get returned down a hose line back to the pond, or they can go out a chute into the tank of the truck.
How many fish do you do per minute or per hour?
Gosh, when we're loading in the morning, we will load a vehicle with I'm thinking of one run that we do, the Schoharie. It's 13,000 9-inch fish and 1,300 12-inch fish. That'll be three trucks, so it'll be 12 tanks total. And that, from soup to nuts, will take us about 45 minutes to load that truck. And that's with sampling, too. It's a pretty efficient process. That's as long as weather isn't compromising and freezing anything up along the way.
Which happens, I imagine.
It absolutely happens. We start stocking in the middle of March when we're still getting sleet and snow and freezing temperatures thrown at us, so some of our gauges can freeze up, but we use hot water. We have that available.
I imagine the fish get pretty crowded. Do they have enough oxygen?
Absolutely. That's part of our job in fish care, is making sure that they're always comfortable. And even in pumping them, you're only crowding them at such a rate so that they're moving and getting ushered along nicely, but that their safety is not compromised. Because if you do crowd too fast, you can overwhelm the pump, and quite frankly, you could chum fish. And we have never done that here, and we will not ever do that here, because this is our job. We take pride in everything we do. Why would we want to ruin our product?
Michelle, does the weather have to be cool for you to do stocking?
No, it really doesn't, but it helps. Certainly, our stocking season is really complete by the end of May, and we certainly have had months of May here where it's hot and water temperatures are increasing. We stock those lower 12 counties, and that's really why we start stocking in middle of March, because we try to anticipate if the waters, certainly in Orange or even further south, Westchester County, are going to warm up beyond 65 before we can get fish there. It can be a little bit taxing. Fun fact, cold water holds more oxygen than warm water. So it's far better for us to get these fish that love cool, clean water out into the cooler temperatures. But fish culture staff are trained to not put fish into warmer water. The first thing we do when we get to a stocking location is take the temperature, even in the cooler months, just to kind of triple check, the double check. And certain times of year, it is unavoidable to put them in warmer water. Say some people are going up to Lake Ontario and it's June and the shore of Lake Ontario is approaching 75 degrees. There are ways to temper the water so that the fish are acclimated before they go into Lake Ontario, so that they're not hitting such warm temperature. pH is really the bigger issue, because pH is a logarithmic scale, so even just a small increase of pH can really be detrimental to fish. So the ability to temper that water is certainly important. But just because the ambient air temperature is hot doesn't mean the fish will have a problem. They transport quite well. We have aeration on the tanks. Yes, on the tanks in transport that keep plenty of oxygen for these fish.
Okay, so you've got your fish. They're in the trucks. How do you unload them into those lakes, streams, and rivers?
Sure. So once we get to a stocking location, the first thing the driver does is really just make sure the scene is safe. He's going to park the vehicle and be certain that our volunteers, who we rely on heavily to get those fish to the water, that everybody's in a safe area, because some of the stocking is roadside. But it's pretty simple. We have 5-gallon buckets on the truck. We put a few inches of water into the buckets, and then we pour fish in. And while the net is getting put into the bucket, we're not counting the fish. We are. For the 9-inch fish, we're counting in tens. And we put about 30 to 50 fish in a bucket, and then the volunteer would take the bucket and bring it down to the stream and pour them in. We can also pull up to a bridge and net fish in. They can withstand a pretty good drop. Or we can actually pull up to a location, whether it is a bridge or maybe a dock or a boat launch, and we can tube fish in. So we have these 12-foot length tubes that can connect to the side of the truck, and we can open up the tank and pull the paddle in it, and the fish can just flow out freely. So volunteers are a big component of our stocking down here. Their influence may not be as necessary in the other 11 facilities, but we rely heavily. So thank you to all the volunteers out there, those folks who come out and help us get the fish to the water. You're very important to us.
They probably get a little wet.
Oh, definitely. And the terrain can be arduous or wet, so wearing those wet weather clothes is important.
How many people does it take to unload a truck?
It totally depends, because when we go and stock the Papacton Reservoir or the Cannonsville, that's one that we can just do from the bridge by ourselves. So it's just the driver going and unloading the truck. They can just be pumped or tubed off the bridge out of the truck. But when we pull up to a location that's streamside and volunteers. We go to Dutchess County, and in Dutchess County, we'll have 12 volunteers. And sometimes it's the more the merrier, because people get tired throughout the entire day. If you're on a four-hour stocking trip, it can be quite grueling.
And when you say sometimes they net the fish to take them out, how big are those nets?
So it's similar to when we're crowding fish, right? You don't want to put too many fish in a net because the fish at the bottom of the net are going to get compromised. You're really only, for 9-inch fish, probably putting 30 to 50 fish in a net. Some of us have the upper muscular strength where we can kind of flip those nets off the bridge. Others grab the bottom of the bag and pour the fish in. Either way, it's up to the discretion of the fish culturist, but everybody seems to have a really good handle of how to keep the fish safe.
So they're pretty big nets.
They are pretty big nets. Yeah, these are probably a foot and a half in depth.
Michelle, do you worry about the risk of bringing back pathogens into your facility?
We don't, because we have stringent biosecurity protocols. You just have to be smart about things. When we meet up with our volunteers at our stocking locations, part of the conversation, in addition to safety, is the biosecurity. The volunteers are instructed to not let a net or a bucket touch the water because you could bring back a pathogen or an invasive species, whether it's actual animal or plant. Something could be brought back here. There are things in our local waters, certainly Didymo, also known as rock snot, and then we have the Japanese knotweed. We would never want to bring that back to our facility. So the volunteers are instructed to not let those items touch the water, and if they do, we do have a protocol for that. We carry Vercon, which is an aquatic disinfectant, on the truck. It's very simple. If that item were to hit the water, we simply spray it with the Vercon and put it out of commission for the day. So once it returns back to the facility, it gets disinfected with bleach and rinsed, and we're all good to go. Anytime that we travel to another hatchery and put another hatchery's fish or water on our truck, once the truck returns here, it's going to get a chlorine disinfection as well. Same thing with tempering water, where we would actually have to put another body of water on our truck. That's potentially introducing pathogen or invasive. Once the truck gets back here, it is put through a disinfection process. And at the end of every stocking run, part of our protocol here is to drive back with your tanks drying out, so the cams are taken off so air can circulate through the tanks. It is a strong belief in our facility and aquaculture as a whole, just things drying out can prevent pathogens or aquatic invasives from taking off. So we have pretty stringent protocols. So while we're aware of it and have protocols in place, we don't fear it.
How many fish are you likely to unload at a single site? And are they a mixture of sizes? I think you mentioned two sizes.
Yeah, so the trout stream management plan that was initiated back in 2021 has facilities throughout the state. When we stock streams, creeks, rivers, there's a 10% rule. So for every 9-inch fish you're putting there, you're putting 10% of those 12-inch fish too. And there's different regulations for how many you can catch and keep, and there's different categorizations of each stream, whether it's a stock, stock extended, or stock extended stream. So as far as how many fish go per stop, that is completely dictated by how many fish are allocated to that policy. And those allocations really come from the regional biologists who have studied that water, and they take into account how big the water is, how wide it is, how deep it is, how much fishing pressure is on that water, as well as the existing biomass of that water, how many fish are already there, before they determine how many fish the production side, the fish culturists, are going to put there. So they have an equation that takes all those factors into account.
I'm just thinking about the fisherman there who comes and says, oh, I got a big one. Little does he know that you deliberately put in a 10% big ones in the mix.
Yeah, it certainly happens.
There's some sites that are going to be difficult for a truck to get into. Say there's not much road space next to the stream. How do you get your fish in there?
Things can be a bit rugged, but it's generally a bucket stock. We try to make these locations as accessible as possible because we want anglers to be there too. So we're not going to put fish in an area where anglers can't get in there. Now, that doesn't mean all anglers. You know, we do have different locations around the state that are ADA compliant, but not everything is. We really stock the fish where people can get in there, and it can be a tough walk sometimes. It can be a long walk, but making sure that the bucket has enough water in it for the fish to survive until you get to the water is important. There are some locations, not down here in the Catskills that we stock, but in the Adirondacks that are actually air stocked. They have helicopters or Cessna planes, fixed wing planes, that do stock those remote ponds of the Adirondacks.
Yeah, I'm thinking about the little creeks that we have going through Mountaindale. I'm wondering whether your fish end up stocking those creeks as well.
So one of those creeks would be Sandberg Creek. Sandberg Creek is in Mountaindale. It's now categorized as a, I believe, wild quality, so it does not fall on our stocking list any longer as of 2021. But that was one that I remember very well. There are two stops on there. One is a very narrow bridge location that we would pull up to, and generally we would just take a net and kind of feather the fish in, because that water gets quite narrow. So you have to be cognizant that the fish aren't hitting rocks or anything. Or you kind of take that arduous walk down the steep banks to the water. And it's tough. In the Catskills, water changes a lot. We have these big storm systems that come through, and where there once was a pool is no longer a pool. So we have to adjust based on that too.
How many volunteers do you have, and how would you get to be a volunteer if you are interested in fish?
You can call the hatchery and we can guide you, but really your local sportsman chapter. So they're usually county based. Sometimes there's a few throughout the county, but reaching out to those local sportsman federations are really kind of your way in. As far as number of volunteers, it fluctuates. A lot of our volunteers are senior citizens. They are folks who are retired. And that's really just based on the workday, right? Because we're working 7 to 3:30 Monday through Friday. We do not stock fish on the weekends when a lot of the younger, not retired folks, right, still employed, have off. It's nice when we do some stocking on holidays and school-age children can get out and help us too. But that's the best way in, is reaching out to your sportsman federation or local sportsman groups, because they are going to be the ones who get the shipping notices from me and acquire the volunteers for us. It's definitely heavy work, and that's why it's nice to have more than just a few people, because throughout the day, you can switch off who's carrying buckets. And some runs are much longer and arduous than others. When we go over to Dutchess County and we're doing the Fishkill Creek, that's an all-day endeavor. You know, it's about a two-hour drive for us to get out there, and then we're going to start our stocking trip. And more than likely, it's only one or two hatchery staff members, and then we have a slew of volunteers. And our fish chair out there is really great to get in contact with, and he's always happy to have more volunteers and does a great job of keeping us safe and getting the fish to the water safely.
So now you know how the DEC gets so many fish to stock our streams. You've been listening to fish culturist Michelle Poprowski of the Catskill Fish Hatchery. If you can suggest a topic or an expert for my next interview, email me at stephanie@wjffradio.org. This has been Stephanie Phillips for Farm and Country.
We hope that you enjoyed our show this week, with production by Radio Catskill volunteers Keith Hubbard, Evan Padua, and Stephanie Phillips. Special thanks goes to our guests, Michelle Poprowski from the Catskill Fish Hatchery in Livingston Manor. This has been your host, Rosie Starr. Thanks for listening local to Farm and Country and supporting Radio Catskill, public radio for the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania. Listen on air at 90.5 FM, on your phone or smart speaker, and online at wjffradio.org. Support for Farm and Country comes from Damascus Citizens for Sustainability, a community-supported, science-based nonprofit, taking legal actions, providing tools for action, and raising awareness of fracking damage since 2008, proactively protecting public health in the Delaware River Basin and beyond. DamascusCitizens.org.
Trout season is kicking off in Trout Town, USA. The first cast at the Junction Pool in Roscoe is April 1st. The 63rd Annual Two-Headed Trout Dinner, April 6th at Rockland House, featuring live local music, dancing, awards, speakers, a raffle, and a silent auction. And throughout the Two-Headed Trout weekend, April 5th, 6th, and 7th, Roscoe businesses have trout-themed events and promotions. More information at roscoeny.com. Paid for by the Roscoe Rockland Chamber of Commerce.
I'm Janice Adams. I do a show to nurture our spirits in these trying times.